Dark Culture.
Hey, this is Tracy Berry interviewing Bill Campbell, science fiction author, book publisher, author of such books as Sunshine Patriots, The Coontown Killing Caper, and editor of Stories for Chip and The Mothership, on behalf of Poe Johnson for the podcast Narratives in Dark Culture at the University of Texas at Dallas. So what's it like being Bill Campbell?
I don't know. I don't really have much time to think about it. It's just very busy. You know, I have a day job. I help produce audiobooks for the blind for Library of Congress. Then I go home and I have my family there, my wife and my daughter. And I work with Rosarium, I own Rosarium, when we have about 40 artists from around the world. So basically, yes, it's being busy.
In one interview, you stated that you got into science fiction in college because of a woman.
Right.
By reading Octavia Butler and Samuel Delaney. Can you describe the process of becoming interested in science fiction, particularly as a black man?
Well, I think, like many blurbs and nerds too, it's something I was attached to as a kid, like almost from the get-go. One of my first pop culture memories is just being in love with Planet of the Apes. And especially, Conquest, when they take over? Yes, that was like one of my favorite movies growing up. And I used to draw as a kid and a teenager, and I was instantly drawn to comic books, but I wasn't as good an artist as I was as a writer. Like, both of them sort of happened simultaneously, like when I was like 9 or so. So I was always drawn to fantastical tales. It was just that I was always discouraged to actually explore the idea of, you know, speculative fiction and comics, because people constantly told me that black people didn't do that. And that was like everybody. So I think for a while there, I guess growing up, I believed that. And then in college, I just stopped believing in a lot of things people told me.
That's what college is for. So
yeah, basically. Yeah.
You've wanted to be a writer since you were 9.
Right.
And that was in part stimulated by a trip to Hollywood, a business trip with your mom.
Right.
Who was in, I guess, media promotional for Westinghouse?
Yeah, she made the Buy Our Circuit Breakers, Buy Our Nuclear Warheads films for Westinghouse.
Okay, so in reading Sunshine Patriots, Sunshine Patriots is full of newscasts, advertisements, propaganda, that's all kind of one thing in your future.
Right.
Right? So can you draw any connections between that early experience with your mom's job, and then did that kind of work its way into your writing, or?
Well, yeah. It's really funny because, especially a first novel, I mean, you throw in everything but the kitchen sink, right? And a lot of it, in all honesty, like, the first short story that ultimately became Sunshine Patriots was written in 1991. And the two things that kind of happened in that period is, the troops come back from the first Gulf War, and they talk about how this erases the bad memories of Vietnam. And, you know, I had an uncle who fought in Vietnam, and his bad memories were not erased, actually quite the opposite, even as late as 1991. And also, that was when the downsizing started. So my mom, she was with Westinghouse for 19 years. She started as a secretary, you know, worked full time, went to night school, graduated in 4 years, and worked her way up to middle management and the media division. And, you know, she lost her job. Just like that, like without even, so in a lot of ways, it was sort of like that novel in a lot of ways is because, you know, I do name check Westinghouse in the book itself. It's just talking about like these, the American dreams that my mother's generation grew up with, just totally being betrayed like at that time. And it was like my reaction to it. Like, these people believed in these things. Like, if you fight for your country, you'll be protected or honored or whatever. And, you know, if you work for this company loyally, you know, they will take care of you at the end. And neither one of those are true. I mean, it's just a Gen X experience, right?
It is. And that's one of my favorite things about Sunshine Patriots is the media representation in the book. I don't think the book would really work without it.
So. Oh, thank you. I don't know. Maybe.
So, how did Butler, Delaney, and others lead you to begin writing science fiction or affect your early efforts?
Well, as I said, you know, you grow up hearing that we're not supposed to do that. And, you know, you're supposed to speak about the Black experience if you're going to be a writer. And people didn't make the connection that you can do that science fictionally. You know, so you're sitting out there going like, no, I am thinking that. But basically what happened was being told that we didn't do that and never seeing anybody doing it makes you believe it, right? But by that time, I mean, there was, Saunders, Butler, Barnes, and Delaney by that time. I was reading Delaney, and I was like, not only is a Black man doing this, he's like smarter and better than everybody else. And I like unattainable goals. So for me, it was sort of like, well, if this brother can do it and be this great, then I want to follow in his wake. Like, I could never be him. Like, there's no way. I'm not even going to try. But just the fact that he did it means that this is something worthy of pursuing, which is why Stories for Chip happened, because it was like that moment when I decided that this is what I want to do.
So that, I mean, that's kind of bringing things back full circle to, I mean, early influence or impetus for you to get in, and then, I mean, to, like, pay
well, off. we never get to thank people like while they're alive. Like, we exactly. Don't even think about it. And I was just like, I want to do that. Because a lot of times people don't understand, or they do, but they don't necessarily get to see, like, there are all these people who, I mean, obviously he gets to see all the people adore him or whatever. And also a lot of it just had to do with, you know, Black achievements always erased in this country. Like, you know, and we fight erasure, like, as we're doing it. And I just wanted a testament to say, because, you know, they are going to act like he didn't exist. Like, it's going to happen. But there's going to be a big-ass book that said that he did, and that all these people loved it.
Science fiction is often thought of as an expression of the white middle-class struggle.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
This may go on for some time.
Okay, go ahead.
What kind of pushback did you get from the publishing world and from other Black people?
In the beginning, it was very much, you can't do that. You can't do that. I mean, everybody's always trying to limit your possibilities. I mean, every time. I was like, my daughter, who's 8, she recently said, wow, this racism and sexism, they're always trying to tell me what to do. And I was like, wow, okay, 8. And that's true. And it's just sort of like, everybody's always trying to limit your possibilities, and for different reasons. One, you know, might be because they don't want to think of their own possibilities. And the other one is that they don't want you to think that you have any possibilities. But now it's easier, you know, because of social media, that we see there's a ton of folks out there, a ton of brown folks around the world who are doing this. So now, and I think the general culture is kind of just more acceptable of science fiction just as a whole. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, we are living a science fictional age. Like, it's here. And I used to say, like, you know, what's more science fiction than the Black president, right? That's like, because it used to be the only place you would see them. It was like, you know, and now we have them. As far as publishing goes, nobody wanted me. You know, Sunshine Patriots was written in 1998. And that was after, because when I first started, you know, I was published in a few, you know, smaller publications and fanzines. And then it just kind of stopped. I mean, a lot of it had to do with, you know, my finding my own voice. And, you know, I'm sure a bunch of those short stories would make me cringe now. But, you know, as I often call it, like, you know, modern day racism is like the ultimate gaslighting, because incredibly racist things happen to you, and white people tell you, like, it's not happening to you. So it's sort of like that, right? I mean, yeah, Sunshine Pages is a crazy ass novel. So was that it, or was it, you know, something else? And you'll never know. But the end result's still the same, right? Like, people were not interested in what I wrote. From magazines to, you know, those early websites to publishers, large and small.
So now you're providing the space
for people like me.
Doing a good job of it, too.
Thank you.
Not just the effort that's important. The content is important, too. And you're bringing in really great writers.
Thank you. That's the plan.
A book like your first one, Sunshine Patriots, which I'll let you describe it.
Oh, my goodness. See, this is the problem, right? The book doesn't have an elevator pitch. I guess you could say it's about a young soldier who's basically raised in the military who becomes an intergalactic hero, right? So not only is he fighting and being a hero across the galaxies, but, you know, he's married to Miss Universe. He has endorsement deals, movies, all this stuff based on his life. And it was very easy for him while he was fighting, you know, scary space creatures. But for the first time, he has to fight humans like himself. It's making him think about what his role is in being a hero.
Okay. A book like Sunshine Patriots has clear analogs to what we know is the real evolution of warfare. But how did where you grew up, your own background, inform the novel?
Part of it is, you know, I'm half immigrant. So my mom's American and my dad's Jamaican. So, you know, that's the Jamaican part of it. And a lot of it just had to do with, as I said, like, I had a lot of family members in the military, and it really didn't seem to do them much good. So looking at how on a very commercial level, people always wrap themselves in the flag and talk about honoring veterans and all this stuff, but in practicality, we don't do it. And one of my little brothers was in Iraq, and he's still going through crap, but, you know, people will, you know, act like, oh, yes, we love you, thank you for your service. And he says, what are you, are you a stockholder at Halliburton? But, you know, so, I mean, that's very much informed me. It's just sort of like this whole, you know, I'm a Jamaican. I grew up in a white working class section of Pittsburgh. I went to Catholic school. And nothing that anybody was telling me growing up was being played out in my own life. You know, oh, freedom, equality, and people are trying to beat my ass because I live in a neighborhood I'm not supposed to live in. And then you go to Catholic school and they're talking about peace, love, and charity, and God loves all children. And the teachers are, like, giving me Fs in class because I'm not supposed to be a good student. So it's just sort of like you just grow up in this whole thing, you know, this cognitive dissonance. And I think that just pretty much plays out in just how I view the world. And it definitely informs that book.
I would agree. Definitely would agree. And I didn't find out too recently that you were half Jamaican, but I can definitely see in Sunshine how that plays out.
Well, because it's very interesting, right? Because it was like, you know, I'm growing up and there's like this society that says this one thing but is incredibly racist. But my dad, who's black, comes to this country. He leaves a black country and comes here to live. So it's always something that's always kind of messes with your head. Right? Because, you know, on my mom's side, yeah, we've been here like 400 years. We didn't have a choice. But my dad comes here. So, and you're like, why did you come here? Like, it doesn't make sense. So, I mean, that very much was like always a question in my head. You know, why would you come here? And that's like the weird thing about America. Why would you come here?
Especially if you're a brown person?
Yeah. I mean, and it makes sense because, you know, we make life hell for everybody else where they live. So, come here, you know.
When you started Rosarium, you said that you were trying to create a place that would have the kinds of stories that you would want to read. Mm-hmm. Why do you think this kind of press is needed, and why hasn't it been done before?
Good question. I think in different iterations it has been done before. Well, what I've been discovering with Rosarium, which you kind of know as a writer, is that the publishing industry, well, it's old and conservative. It's been running the same way since the end of the Civil War, right? But the publishing industry is not built for inclusion.
Obviously, so.
Yeah, but it's deeper than you think. It's not just a matter of just normal kind of white supremacist thinking that none of us want to admit that we have. And like, oh, you know, it's sort of like, what was it? Like before the whole gentrification wave, there were like these studies that white people said that they wanted like really diverse neighborhoods. But once that the brown population got over 6%, like people started moving. You know, but it's more than that. I mean, it's just like fundamentally from, you know, distributors, stores, publishers, sales reps, journalists, to even customers, it's just sort of like, it's not built for having a lot of diverse voices. Like, it's just not built for it. And because I know this now, because I'm in the guts of it. So I'm sitting there going like, you should go to this store. Why should it go to this store? Because that's what they specialize in. And like now it's even worse because all those specialty bookstores have collapsed. So, you know, there's only like 65 black bookstores. There are 10 LGBT bookstores. And there are 13 feminist-identified bookstores in this country. So they don't even have to think about diversity anymore. Except that people keep clamoring for it. But what I'm finding is like, you know, if you are some other, and that was air quotes, the bookstore isn't even designed for you. So you walk in, so you don't even necessarily go, right? Like where I live, our little mall Books a Million, I mean, their customer base is about 95% black or Latino, and their books are like 95% white. They sell Bill O'Reilly.
Wow.
Right. So, you know, but they sell Bill O'Reilly. And like, you couldn't find Delaney in that bookstore. You couldn't find Nalo. You couldn't find Juno in that bookstore. But you can find Bill O'Reilly and Newt Gingrich. Like, just the entire system is not built for this. So that's why it's necessary, because, and I'm not the only one, but we have to build a structure that's sort of a hybrid that's within and without the system.
Right.
Because the system's not going to change. Because it doesn't.
No, I mean, it's one of those industries where I've even known people who were, I knew a big 300-pound white guy that wrote romance novels. Mm-hmm. And he was very successful, but he couldn't do signings. The publisher wanted to hire a proxy to go do his signings.
No, this is and this is American culture in general. It's built for appropriation, but it's not built for inclusion.
Right.
You know, we'll take your shit, but we're not taking you.
Right. So at what point, I assume that you tried to get published by mainstream publishers for...
Oh, yeah. I used to have a big fancy schmancy New York agent, yeah.
And so at what point in that process do you say, it's not my content, it's not what I'm producing, it's me. It's me that they don't want.
Well, as I said, like, you'll never know. Well, what happened with my agent was, this was during my Booty novel, which is how I got the agent, because I wrote something cute and smart and funny. So that's how I got the agent. And one time while we were talking, he accidentally slipped, oh, you're not ghetto enough. So then I finally knew why I wasn't being published. And that's how Coontown was born. It took years, right? I was sort of like, I'm not ghetto enough, and I'm not going to write about what they want me to write because I'm not from that. You know, it's an accident of birth, right? I mean, my dad's from Kingston. My mom's from a small mining town. They moved to the suburbs of Pittsburgh. Like, it has nothing to do with any moral choice that I made or any kind of supposed superiority or inferiority. It's just what it was. And, you know, white authors aren't told that they're not Appalachian enough. Or, you know, it's like, you know, we're really looking for, like, a San Diego flair from you. Like, you know, a white author would never hear that. I think what really got me was when it made me realize that, because it's like I couldn't figure out what to write. And I started thinking that, you know, I must be shit. Like, I must not be good enough. And then some dude at West Virginia universities wrote part of his PhD dissertation on Sunshine Patriots.
Oh, wow.
So all of a sudden, you know, while I'm thinking like, oh, I just have to give up. I'm almost 40 and nobody wants what I write. You know, he's like, oh, yeah, I'm writing something about science fiction responses to war. So it's like me, Heinlein, Le Guin, and Haldeman, and somebody else. So I'm like, oh, I really don't suck. They just don't want me, you know. So, I mean, and that's how Coontown was born. And then, you know, Coontown was being taught in a couple places here and there. And you're like, I'm an independent author, and, like, these little pockets of academia know who I am. So then, yes, I have to start something to look for other people, because I know, you know, I'm not special. I know this is happening to other people, and let me find them.
In 2015, you published and edited a collection of graphic short stories called Artist Against Police Brutality, which has proven to be timely and prescient. How did that project come about, and does it serve as an exemplar for the kind of work that will be featured at Rosario?
It was Eric Garner. A lot of things that have happened in the past few years, from Mothership to APB, was sort of sitting there going like, somebody needs to do something about this. And then you sit there and go, oh, I can do something about this. So Mothership was one like, wow, look at all these, you know, brown authors all around the world doing this stuff. And the publishing industry says we don't exist. Somebody needs to show that these people exist. And I was like, oh, I guess that might be me. So that's how that came about. And really and truly, I was just railing when the Eric Garner thing, because it's like another one of those things where you're not surprised that they weren't going to go to trial. But it didn't stop from being outraged because it was so close up. Like, it wasn't like the Rodney King, you know, dirty little video that you can't kind of see from, I mean, it was like in your face. Like, you could see the pores on his face, you know, like the tape was. So I was literally on the phone with John Jennings, cursing up a storm about it, and then I was just like, I'm tired of this, I can't do it, we'll just come out with an anthology, we'll call it APB, Artists Against Police Brutality, I don't give a shit, we're just going to do something. And he said, okay. And then I called up Jason Rodriguez, and I was just like, yeah, I think we're going to do this, and I really need your help, because I never edited a comics anthology, but Jason does that. Like, that's his thing. So that night we just said, okay. Like, we had no clue what it was going to be about, the angle, anything. We just were like, you got to say something. Like, we know, like, people aren't going to pick up APB and, like, all of a sudden, like, rays from heaven are going to come down and the system changes. But you got to say something. As far as, is it an exemplar? Part of my mission with Rosarium is that everybody gets to tell their own stories, and they get to do it their own way, right? Because so many writers write toward the white gaze, and, well, you know, I'm not white, so you can write towards my gaze. I don't know. If something comes up, you know, some issue that's really important to people, and they need to take it somewhere, you know, I mean, you know, there's issues of quality, blah, blah, blah. but if it, then they can. You know, white people don't have magical powers. You know, you're quite dazzling. But yeah, people need to stop being afraid of that. So that's kind of, it's just that people need to, like, actually just not be so concerned about the white corporate mediated gaze anymore. Like, we need to just stop it. Like, because where is it getting us?
Well, in my opinion, is it if you're a fan, if you're a reader, that if you do that, then it limits your ability to find quality stuff.
Probably.
There's so often a debate about the role of identity for a writer. Do you think of yourself as a black writer, a science fiction writer, a black fiction writer, or just a writer? And does it matter?
Well, it's always very complicated, because you're all those things, at the same time and separately, right? And the only complicated thing is that, you know, as soon as you say that I am not a white male writer, then you're going to be treated less than. But, you know, I love being black, like, all day long. But then I know that I'm going to be treated less than. Like, so then it just becomes a very complicated thing, right? So people want to go, I'm just a writer, or I'm just an artist. But, you know, I'm a black writer, and I write whatever I want. And, you know, it's up to you how you're going to treat me.
What, if any, are black writers and other writers of color responsibility to discuss the political realities of their racial and ethnic background?
None. They can do whatever they want. I mean, it's part of Rosarium. Do whatever you want.
That's great.
Dark culture.